Fanlon Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. Dialogue Conspiracy is a program which shares the political research of Mae Brussel. For almost 10 years of work are based on the theory that government is moved as much or more by conspiracy than by any democratic process. Tonight we'll jump headlong into Dialogue Conspiracy. May?
Hi, Hill.
Should say this afternoon.
Okay.
My watch must have stopped.
How are you?
Fine. We've got Martha Mitchell on the brain today.
That made the news this week.
Made Martha. The news. The death penalty unconstitutional in the United States. That made the news. Sure.
That's great. Yeah. Keep our political passes alive till we can find out what really happened. I'm really glad, and other people too that are framed on death row. I'm collecting a list of people old fellows are coming forth now admitting they planted evidence on them, and I'd like to get them out alive. It's important to do with the death penalty because so many people are paid money to say a person's guilty, and even if they are guilty, they should be understood and have a chance to explain the motivations for murder, how they went about doing a murder. I don't like the death penalty for about 30 reasons. But as a political researcher into political assassinations, when I know that men are sitting in the jail that didn't commit the crimes they're charged with, you do away with the death penalty, and then these men have a chance to tell, possibly, they won't all be killed in jail. Phil, you got a letter this week, a phone call from a group in Santa Cruz. Phil called me, wanted to know if I knew the name Don Amany, and I was not familiar with that name. He's the Northern California coordinator for an organization called the CIPA. It's the Committee to Investigate Political Assassinations, and they're having a party up in the Santa Cruz area this next week. And Phil asked me if I was familiar with this group. When you do political research, you meet all kinds of people. You meet people that come in to your research team that are legitimate researchers that are collecting information and sharing information. Then you meet other people that come from the Central Intelligence Agency that infiltrate your group just like any other group. You're in a sensitive area. And you have to be very careful to identify who is collecting information or collecting money or what the organization is. These particular people that have moved into the Santa Cruz area are under the leadership of a man named Rusty Rhodes, who was in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and he's moved up here, and he's talking at the colleges and showing the 8mm movie of the killing of John Kennedy that Zapruder took, Abraham Zapruder, and he sells that movie, and he lets you know that President Kennedy's head went backwards. He shows you the movie that Dick Sprague had here, the same one, that his head goes backwards, and therefore the shots couldn't have come from where Oswald stood. But beyond that, I'm not sure how much research Rusty Rhodes has done. He's come from Texas when he moved to the L.A. area. I've never met him. I've talked to him on the phone a few times. A man that was on KGO with Rusty by the name of Paul Copley is in this committee, and I spoke to him on the telephone. They wanted to be on our show, Phil, and I asked Copley if he ever heard Dialogue Assassination, and he had only heard the one the week before he called us. These aren't very serious researchers if they live in the area and don't collect information or increase their knowledge of political assassination, the information that we throw out each week. They said that Penn Jones, the researcher in Texas, is national coordinator of their committee. I called Penn Jones this week, and he is not the coordinator of any committee to investigate assassinations. There is a national committee in Washington called the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, headed by Bernard Fensterwald from the Senate Crimes Investigating Committee. Fensterwald has a organization, foundation, that is recognized that all legitimate researchers are members of. And I think you have to be very careful and steer clear of these fringe groups. I don't know anything about Paul Copley, Rusty Rhodes, or Don Ameny. When he called the station and you talked to him, he'd never heard one of our shows. Is that right? I mean, he said he had never heard Dialogue Assassination. And yet these
he'd heard bits and pieces of some shows.
Yeah.
But never heard the shows themselves.
Never really heard them. I don't know this organization. If you want to see the movies, go ahead. But the Committee to Investigate Political...
Well, I think they're putting on a fundraising concerts.
To get money to go to the Miami Convention. That's one of the things they wanted to do, is to get down there. You have to be very careful of who you meet in the line of researchers or in any... when you're in a rock group, you can be infiltrated and the concert can be broken up. The art community in town has been broken up by political espionage and agents. The legitimate artists have been pushed aside and the agents have taken over. The music scene, the theater scene, is always infiltrated. And I'm not saying, I don't know anything about this group. I don't know them. I haven't met them. We've been on the air a year. Their credentials as researchers are shaky. If you want to, you have to be careful. You can go hear their lectures, ask some questions. And then where Rusty speaks, he's up at Cabrillo, ask questions and put your heads together and you figure out what's going on. There were people that heard Rusty Rhodes speak up at Cabrillo that asked him to announce that Dick Sprague would be here the next day on the Monterey Peninsula. And Dick has written many articles for Computer and Automations and has many, many slides of Dealey Plaza in addition to these movies. And they wouldn't announce up in the Santa Cruz area that the people had an opportunity to see these slides and movies down here. The purpose of doing this political research is to say that there was a conspiracy, a coup d'etat in this country, and people who don't want to share that information or facts or turn other people on to sources of information or keep learning themselves, who are literally dragging their feet on the ground, they may not be against us, but they're not with us. And you'll have to use your own judgment. When you mingle among, there's all kinds of people on the outside, and use your own judgment. I'm going to talk about Martha Mitchell because she's the newest political prisoner. This bumper sticker's out now, free the Watergate 5 and free Martha.
Watergate 5, referring to the hotel?
Yes. We'll go into two coincidences. The Republican Party travels really fancy. When Arthur Bremer's paths were retraced, the alleged would-be assassin of Governor George Wallace, he had stayed at the Waldorf Astoria for a couple of days, wining and dining in style, I guess. And that's the New York headquarters of Spiro Agnew. He lives at that hotel when he's in New York. That's a coincidence. But you get to the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., where John and Martha live, and you're getting a little more than a coincidence, because checking into that hotel in Washington, D.C., two times in the month of May and also the month of June, were nine guests that checked into the Watergate Hotel that took two rooms at the Watergate Hotel. And these guests used pseudonyms, they used aliases, that were characters out of books of fiction that a man by the name of Mr. Hunt writes for the CIA. He's written 42 books. He's a novelist, and he writes for the CIA. And they used the names of characters in his books and checked into the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. Saturday, the 17th of June, there was a breakthrough in the Democratic headquarters, and five of the men who were checked into the Watergate Hotel were caught, and you read about it in the newspapers, you'll be reading about, the trial will be going on. They were caught in their fancy dinner suits that they had dined downstairs and had on rubber surgical gloves to leave no fingerprints, and they were taking apart the ceiling of the Democratic National Headquarters, the suites at the Watergate Hotel.
You know, these are five of the nine. Were these five of the nine who checked in with the pseudonyms from...
Yes, okay. Five of the nine, and I'll give you all of the aliases that have been revealed so far. Nine people checked into two rooms at the Watergate Hotel, and five of them were caught upstairs by the security police of the hotel breaking in the headquarters, and they had very expensive electronic equipment. It seems that they've spent $30,000 in cash so far doing whatever they were doing that night, and they had on them $6,500 worth of cash in crisp new $100 bills, and we'll go into where this came from. in their pocket, and there were five of them caught by the police at the Watergate Hotel. That's late Saturday morning, early Sunday late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Sunday's paper in Washington, D.C., didn't mention much about the background of the men they were going into, who they were that had been arrested. Monday, the 19th of June, there was an article that in all the papers all over the country about this break-in at the hotel. On the 24th, that's the next Saturday, that's 1 week later, there's a newspaper article printed in around the country, a UPA wire, which was based on a telephone conversation that Martha Mitchell made Thursday following the break-in at the hotel. And she picked up the UPI telephone and said if her husband didn't get out of politics right away, she was going to leave him. That's all the San Jose Mercury said out here on that day, was if she doesn't get out of politics, I'm going to leave him. Well, the panic that she expressed in just those few words indicated that she knew something about what was happening at the Watergate Hotel. Now, one of the five men that was arrested, his name is McCord, and McCord was the chief of all security at Langley, Virginia, for the CIA headquarters for 19 years. He was chief of security on the grounds at Langley, Virginia. And he left the CIA 2 years ago. Left, I say in quotes, because I'm going to show you how this was a total CIA operation and the reasons for this group working together at this particular time. McCord left the CIA, and he was appointed by John Mitchell to be in charge of all security in Miami for President Nixon, for the Republican Party, and he was chief of the committee. He was hired for the security also in Washington for the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon, and John Mitchell is the chief of that committee. Now, that's an important committee because John Mitchell was the head of the whole Justice Department, and he stepped down to re-elect Richard Nixon. He resigned from the Justice Department for the position to re-elect Richard Nixon. And Mr. McCord left the CIA to be the chief of security for John Mitchell's committee to re-elect Richard Nixon. And McCord was caught in the hotel. Another man that was caught with him, I'll go into the names, his name is Mr. Barker. He was the funding man for the entire Bay of Pigs CIA operation, and that's a lot of money. Into Nicaragua and Guatemala, he carried the cash that paid the Americans and the Cubans, the funding man. He's a very important man in Miami for the funding of the Bay of Pigs operation.
What's your source on that?
Oh, I've brought in all the newspaper articles. There's lots of sources. When we get to Barker, I'll show you the source. Sir, I brought in an outline of about 37 divisions that I've broken this research down into in just the last 8 days. The articles are home, except for one Time magazine article, but I have the sources at home. I just brought the outline today because I want to run along and cover so much material. I didn't bring
individual. Was that
specifically
that he was the funding man for the Bay of Pigs?
He was Barker. One of the men arrested was the funding man for the entire Bay of Pigs operation. Yes, we'll go into the biography of Barker. He was the key role in the Bay of Pigs operation, and he carried with him also. From Mexico City. We'll go into the funding later because I don't want to jump around too much. And I want to go back to Martha Mitchell right now so we don't lose that train of thought. That these important men, the man in charge of all the funding for the Bay of Pigs operation, was caught at the Watergate Hotel. And McCord, the former chief of security at the CIA and the head of the Republican Committee, the security in Miami and in Washington, was caught in the Watergate Hotel, plus three other men we'll go into. Well, the police looked for four men that are missing, that were registered at the hotel. Five were caught, and four men were missing. Now, Martha Mitchell got on the telephone on Thursday from out in California. They flew her out. She and John Mitchell got on a plane that Saturday night and ended up in California after the robbery had taken place. And she said, I want to get out of politics. She said she didn't like the cop and robber game, and she was adamant that her husband had to get out of politics. She called a UPI wire service, and while she was talking, her telephone was pulled off the wall. And she was in her bedroom at Newport Beach, and she gave a press interview from Maryland when she got back there 2 days later and said, if you could see me, you wouldn't believe me. I'm black and blue. I'm a political prisoner. She said, Her husband suggested that she should remain in California. They left me in California with absolutely no information, and they don't want me to talk. I'm reading, these are the AP wires and UPI. She says, I want my husband to get out of this. It's nothing but a robber's game, and I want my husband out of it and leaving right now. Well, Martha Mitchell also said something which was very interesting, and it goes into the question of plausibility and denial that we did on the Pentagon Papers. Martha Mitchell said, she was talking on the telephone, and I'm reading the direct quote. This is from the Washington Post Service. They threw me on the bed, five men did it, and they stuck a needle in my behind, and I've never been treated like this before. And she showed the reporter two bandaged fingers and that a doctor in California stitched up after her battle with five guards. And she had bruises on her arms and thighs. Mr. Mitchell went to the White House and talked things over with the president Monday morning, and then he went on to Rye, New York, to speak to his wife. She said, Mrs. Mitchell's committee to reelect the president then put out a statement counteracting what Martha Mitchell said. She said, they threw me on the bed. Five men did it. There were five guards. Now, the committee to reelect President Nixon counteracted and said, in quotes, she has one guard, the same man that goes with her husband and her every place they travel because of threats on their life. Everyone knows Mrs. Mitchell has her personal problems. She's perfectly charming at times, and especially at night. She's not herself. And nobody beat her up. It's just not true she ever had five guards. Now, let's do a little simple arithmetic. Four men are missing at the Watergate Hotel. Five are caught, and two of them are very important. Nine are registered at the Watergate. Four are missing. Martha and John Mitchell get on an airplane and go to California. And Martha has one guard, usually. But there's five with her. Now, there's four men in California that don't usually travel with her. And there's four men missing from the Watergate Hotel where the Mitchells live. One of the men caught is employed by John Mitchell. He gets $1,200 the month of April, the month of May. So I assume when June was over, he's going to get another $1,200. Martha, I can visualize her. Before I knew that she had this extra entourage with her, I realized that somebody at the Watergate ran into John Mitchell's apartment. They were caught. And that she realized that she would be tied up with this suit. Larry O'Brien of the Democratic Committee has placed a $1 million suit against these people for breaking in. Martha plays the game dirty, and so does John when they're not caught. But when they're caught, she panics. See, she doesn't mind all the dirty tricks they did to Bobby Kennedy or John Kennedy or Martin Luther King and hundreds of people along the way. That's not dirty politics. But these guys must have crashed her place, and they took an airplane to California. And I'm doing an article on it now. I want to know how they got to California, and I want Larry O'Brien to tell what plane they took, what pilot. Was it an ITT plane? It wasn't commercial. Martha can count to five. If five people come in my room, it doesn't matter whether she's crazier at night than she is in the daytime. She still can add to five.
Well, the arithmetic is circumstantial and coincidental, but it is interesting arithmetic.
I think it's interesting arithmetic that the denial also, because last week we read from the Pentagon Papers the plausibility and the denial. If you're caught, you deny knowing anything. And they had to sacrifice Mr. Conein, who was their co-between between the Vietnamese Army and the CIA when they overthrew the junta in Greece. So the point is that they have to say, well, you know, she has her problems, and everyone knows she's got personal problems, that there's only one person assigned. So the arithmetic, living in the apartment and considering these men were employed by who they were employed by, John Mitchell, is very interesting. Now, John Mitchell claims that he didn't employ these particular men.
Let me get something straight before we get into that now.
Yeah.
The Watergate Hotel is the residence for John and Martha?
Yes, their apartment.
It's also the headquarters for the Democratic National
Committee? Well, it's a very large... Yeah, there's large hotels, you know, like the Hilton and very large hotels, the Waldorf.
But they're staying in the same hotel.
Yeah, they're in the same hotel.
Committee to reelect the president's chairman and the Democratic National Committee headquarters.
In the same hotel.
Okay.
Yeah. The chairman lives in that hotel, and the Democratic Party lives in that hotel. And because the man who was caught breaking in the place is directly employed to John Mitchell, And because four are missing and four show up in California, I think it would be interesting to keep asking what kind of transportation that John Mitchell took. Now, Time magazine came up with an article which was interesting. Sometimes their reporting really bugs me. But they had a question about the suspicion of John Mitchell, and they called it, they're calling this now the Washington Bay of Pigs, which is very appropriate. But Time had an article, very suspicious of John Mitchell and Patrick Gray, and you can believe there's reason to be. This is July the 3rd issue, called Suspicion. And it says that John Mitchell and acting director Patrick Gray both showed up at the Newporter Inn in California, Newport Beach, the day after the arrest. See, John Mitchell's first interview was in the East Coast, and now he's flown out west, he and Martha, and Patrick Gray's there, too. But they're not staying at the same hotel. They don't know each one is out there. See, so Patrick Gray says, well, you know, it's a big place. The Newporter Inn is just, it has to be so big that the acting head of the FBI and the former chief of all the justice in California are staying at the hotel and don't know it. So they say that the Mitchell...
Also circumstantial and coincidental, but very interesting.
Yeah, well, even Time says it's suspicious. And they say that Mitchell was in a villa and Patrick Gray was in room 331. And now they're referring it to it as Washington's Bay of Pigs. And it's going to be that. And I'm going to try to show in this hour that the my interpretation, you know, I've talked for a long time on the reasons that I think it's going to be imperative to kill Richard Nixon before 1972 elections, and there's evidence that the people in power intend to do it. Lewis Tackwood has said it from the L.A. Police Department. The intention is to manipulate Richard Nixon into such a position that the next assassin will have a motivation. He won't be the Bremer Oswald type. Now, I cut out two articles for the paper this week because the cast of characters, all those nine people, were involved with the Bay of Pigs invasion into Cuba. They were anti-Castro Cubans that live in the Miami area, except for McCord of the CIA, who had direct contacts to the White House, as well as Barker. The paper just this week had two articles. One was that Nixon's next trip may be to Cuba. Now, this is from New York City. It was a Chicago Tribune article that the State Department is considering the pros and cons of sending Nixon to Cuba. Now, the State Department would only do that, the same State Department that can plan other political assassinations, would only do that to antagonize the anti-Castro Cubans who are well-trained, well-armed, who would then have a motivation to kill, they would kill Nixon because he is making overtures to Cuba. They said, it goes on, there's an inconsistency in the article that was from the Chicago Tribune by Elliot Janeway, in which it says that politically, the Cuban voters are an important faction in the balance of power in Florida. If the 1972 election is closely contested, Florida is going to be a fierce battleground because the Republicans need this as a turning point as far as the Southern strategy goes. It says Democratic allegiance in 1970 used to belong is going to the Republicans, and Nixon's famous Southern strategy hinges on holding on to these votes, and the Cuban vote is going to play a swing role. In addition, the Cubans have done well in Florida, and they have a large minority voting bloc. Now, if Richard Nixon needs the votes of that large bloc in Florida to win the election, why would he go across the water just a couple hundred miles to antagonize those Cubans and start whining and dining with Castro? Unless the State Department sent him to Cuba, which would then give the motivation for the anti-Castro Cubans to shoot him, and we would have that police state and cancel the elections, which they have, certain people have been manipulating for the last 6 years. Because the very next week after, it says that he may go to Cuba and have two-way traffic for Cubans and Americans and so forth. And they're talking about giving up Guantanamo and Nixon making overtures to Cuba. He wouldn't do that in an election year when he needs the anti-Castro Cuban votes. There's a large mass of those in Texas, California, Louisiana, and Florida, a large mass of people. And Nixon wouldn't go over to Cuba now at the windup before the election. and antagonize those votes that he needs. So there is one article that the State Department wants to send Nixon to Cuba. Then there's another article that Brezhnev, this is on the 28th, this last week, reaffirms his aid to Cuba, that the Communist Party chief, Brezhnev, reaffirmed the Soviet defense of Cuban security. He said that Cuba's international position, interest, and security will be supported by Russia. This is inviting a confrontation. You see, somebody is manipulating Richard Nixon. He said, Brezhnev said, when we speak of our fraternal sentiments towards Cuban people, it's not a tribute of politeness or sentimentality for us. For Soviet communists and friendships will always be associated with businesslike and practical solidarity. And from year to year, Soviet-Cuban relations are becoming richer and fuller. Now, Russia has been out of the picture of Cuba for quite a few months. They have been downplaying their relationship until Castro just went there recently. And Russia has never come out with such a strong statement of a love affair for Cuba. We're going back into Cuba. And it says in the early days, Castro was awarded, or last week he was ordered given the Order of Lenin. And they promised full cooperation and they'll develop a new friendship at all levels. Now, at the same time that somebody's playing around with Russia, making these overt gestures to Cuba, will always be friendly, we'll pledge you aid, we'll pledge you arms and trade. At that time, the State Department both admits that Nixon needs the Cuban votes, the anti-Castro and Cuban votes, and that they may send him to Cuba. And I feel that this would be a logical death trap for Richard Nixon. I'm going to go into the biography of these people and the CIA funding of this particular break-in at the Watergate Hotel and show you why I think it's setting up a death trap for Richard Nixon. A lot of people want to trace this whole thing right up to the White House, but I think it is happening in spite of Nixon. And I think that Martha Mitchell and Richard Nixon would just be two little stumbling blocks in taking over the country and even not having an election.
Okay, May, let's deal with that in a minute after we take a very brief break.
Okay.
You're listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel. We'll be back in a moment after we identify the station. Take care of business here. This is 24-hour KLRB-FM, Carmel.